Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. In an earlier program this week, we took a look at the trials, tribulations, and challenges facing urban education in America today. We have our share here. Among those districts in the midst of the struggle, the Normandy District, it's been plagued by low academic performance that led to a loss of accreditation. That, in turn, led to the loss of hundreds of students through a controversial student transfer plan. That resulted in a significant funding crisis. The instability extends to the community as a whole, which for the most part has its own social and economic problems. Joining us in studio to talk about the Normandy District and the communities it serves, Dr. Tyrone McNichols, Superintendent of Normandy Schools. He's had the job since the 1st of July. Chris Kraemeyer is President CEO of Beyond Housing, an organization committed to strengthening neighborhoods through support and services. It's a key partner in Vision 24-1, a community development model that focuses on the 24 municipalities served by the Normandy School District. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us today. Nice to talk to you. I know, Dr. McNichols, you're getting used to this sort of thing because since the 1st of July, you've been a very, very busy guy. They say timing is everything, right?
Yes. One way or the other, timing is everything.
Yeah, exactly. Is using the word a troubled district an understatement for Normandy as far as you're concerned?
I would use the word a district that has its challenges that we have to address throughout the community and throughout the organization.
Well, let's talk about some of those challenges. The most immediate ones, I guess, are finding a way to come up with some money to keep the district going. Where do you stand on that now, and what's at stake within the district itself?
Well, based on the transfer program, we will have to send about $15 million in tuition costs and transportation costs to the 20 different districts that our children have chosen to transfer to. So it's a voluntary transfer system in that regards. And so we have to look at all of our different programs, our staffing patterns, and we have to make some decisions. The good thing, I guess, because it's news out there, is that the state board has at least recommended additional funding. That won't fix the problem, but it will help with the problem. But we still have to look at our own budget and make some decisions about what are the priorities. And our priorities have to be those who are closest to the students.
Well, DESE, the Department of Secondary Education, is talking about $6.8 million, I believe, is the figure. Mm-hmm. You're talking 15.
Correct.
Okay. There's a lot more money that has to come into the coffers.
Well, we spend about $12,000 per student as far as what we actually get from the state is about seven. So the rest of that money is local money that comes through local revenues. And so as we talk about the actual number of students that have transferred, we look at the numbers, about 1,000 students, because the numbers have dropped since the original mm-hmm. first day. We have about 1,048 kids that are actually in the transfer program based on the bills that we're getting from the other districts. And so we're making sure, first of all those students are accurate. But in that case, we are the majority of our kids are going to Francis Howe. We have almost 500 kids that are going there. We have a little over 100 going to Clayton. What we have to look at is the difference in those costs. That's the significant difference for us. If it was as simple as we got in 12,000 and we sent out 12,000, it would be a wash. We could make the kind of adjustments that are necessary. But in some cases, we have districts such as Clayton, the cost is 19. So that's $7,000 over the 12 we have to come up, which means we have to reduce $7,000 on the 12 for the kids that have stayed. And so what creates this dilemma also is that we have 300 students who showed up in the transfer program who were not part of the Normandy district last year. These are brand new kids who just moved in. Now, about 67 of them came from private school, but the rest of them came from other school districts outside of the Normandy platform. What makes that even more of a challenge for us is that right now about 77% of our kids who were there last year chose to stay, which is great. I mean, it's great. They're committed to the Normandy platform, and they're committed to the district. But we have to provide a quality education for those students as well.
What happens if you don't get the money?
Well, I'm optimistic that the partnerships that we have with Beyond Housing and other organizations who are willing to step up and support us and the changes that we'll have to make internally will allow us to be able to make it through the year. I'm just hoping, though, that the 6.8 will also be there for us as well so that we don't have to cut to the marrow, as I call it. We can cut to the bone, but we don't have to cut to the marrow.
Well, what I've been reading, if this doesn't happen, you've got a bankrupt district on your hands.
Well, we'll be in a situation where we'll be financially stressed. And I keep hearing out there that it's going to be a certain date like February or whatever. We believe we could make it through most of the year, but we do believe there will be a time when we get to you, we'll be financially stressed. And the question then becomes, what will DESE do when we hit that mark? Because there are statutory aspects of what they are responsible for doing if that happens.
But in the meantime, you'd be looking at staff cuts, you'd be looking at program cuts and
All the things that could help the kids achieve better in school, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it, that this is really that harmful in this way?
Well, the way I've coined it is we're expected to do better, faster, with less resources, and we have to have all that done by February because that's when the second wave of the transfer program starts for people to enroll, and the test doesn't come out until March.
The test. Okay. Well, we'll get on the test in a little bit. Chris, let me turn to you. Dr. McNichols just said that you're in the vanguard of community assistance to help solve the problem. What in the world can you do to solve this problem?
Well, I don't think we're going to solve the problem. I think we view ourselves as a partner with the school district and the community to suggest that, you know, we believe in this idea that home matters, that yes, it's about the physical place you live, but it's the life in and around that home that fuels and draws the best out of the people that live there. So what we've said to the Normandy School District for the last, you know, 3.5 years is how can we and all our other partner not-for-profits be most helpful, strategic and tactical, to help the children who show up at the Normandy schools each and every day be successful? What would that look like? And that's both, yes, stabilizing neighborhoods. So we're building homes. We just completed the construction of 31 new homes within two blocks of Barack Obama Elementary School, one of the newer schools in the Normandy School District. We're very intentional about where we decided to build those homes, near a brand new school that's beautiful. We were doing home rehab around Barack Obama as well. We've built a grocery store in Pagedale. We've built a senior building with a bank. We're hopefully to close on financing before the year's out on a health clinic and a movie theater. In addition to those physical landscape changes, and there's more than I talked about, we've also said to the district, what are the service needs that, again, the district says would be helpful to have our kids be successful? So one of the first things we heard early on was pre-K, right? If we can get our kids positioned for the first day of kindergarten, so the teachers at the district have a running shot at let's get the kids where they need to be at the end of kindergarten and at the end of first grade, second grade accordingly. We believe we have a good chance, and I think even some of the Normandy data says that when the kids stay in Normandy, they do really well. It's a challenge of kids moving in and out of the district. So what we said in the pre-K space is who's serving kids? And what are their challenges and how can we assist them? So United for Children, a great partner of ours right now, and we're in our third year, works with 15 of the 30-some-odd licensed pre-K providers in the Normandy School District footprint, helping with teacher training, helping with curriculum updates, helping with facility upgrades. And then we've forged a communication link with the school district. So when the district says kindergarten ready, the folks in the pre-K understand what that means, and they're providing the kinds of resources both academically and socio-emotionally so when the kids show up, they're ready. So that's one example of the Normandy School District has a small pre-K program serving, I think it's around maybe 100 kids, give or take, which is great. But again, there's over 3,000 kids who are in pre-K in the footprint that will eventually feed to Normandy. Our job is, because the district's not in charge of, nor do they have the resources to work on pre-K. So we're trying to rally partners to say, let's enhance and support pre-K work so when the children show up the first day of kindergarten, they're prepared and ready, and Dr. Nichols and his team can run from there.
A couple of things that you've said I wonder about. When we talk about pre-K programs, and everybody in education we've talked to here in recent months indicates that definitely is the way to go.
But that's not a newsflash, right?
That's not a newsflash. But this is a longer-term process. It takes time for all of this to develop. Another thing you said, Chris, was that when the kids get to stay in Normandy High School, they tend to do very well. Well, the fact of the matter is they haven't done very well. I mean,
So the differential, Don, is the annual mobility rate in Normandy is over 50%. So when you look at only the kids.
What do you mean by mobility rate?
Meaning the number of kids who from the beginning of the school year to the end of the school year transition in and out of the school district, right? So when you window it down to the kids who actually stay, when you just track them as a metric of how well the kids are doing, those kids do relatively well because they don't have the upheaval of moving around. They can stay with the district. But again, that's a small percentage because of all the churning of why families leave. Is it you got evicted, you got foreclosed, somebody got sick, you moved because of good news, right? Something positive happened in your life and you moved some other way. So again, there are all these things that the district has zero control over. The district cannot control when somebody moves in or out of their community. They have to respond to the kids that show up every day to get educated.
How much of an impediment to what you and your associates in 24-1 are doing is what's going on in Normandy right now?
Well, look, I think the work would have been hard without the Supreme Court ruling, right? It would have, and so the Supreme Court ruling made it incredibly hard. The challenge that we have is Dr. McNichols and his team have literally been there with the kids for 30 days. Right. So, yes, $6.8 million is great, but that's just a short-term solution. There's a longer-term solution that says how are we going to get districts like Normandy that have similar kinds of challenges, how are we going to get them positioned for long-term success? That is, the teaching that happens in every classroom, in every building, every day has to be good. And Dr. McNichols, I'm sure, will talk a little bit about some of his priorities that he and his team have, which has really been narrowed down, and then give them the opportunity to be successful. And then for us is how do we provide those other supports, right? How do we stabilize the housing? How do we create opportunities to access health care so people have reasonable access? How do we create economic opportunities in community that begin to stabilize the lives that people have day in and day out so they're not worrying about all these other things and they can say when the kids come home, like a lot of middle class and well-to-do families, how was your day? Let's talk about your homework. Let me see that your homework is done. Let me see if I can help you with that, and then not worry about the next crisis that happens in the following day. They can get up, get dressed, and go to school. So if we can assist in that and allow the district to do the teaching and learning, and yes, they have to be held accountable. I've heard Dr. Nichols, many times say, "Look, we need to be held accountable," but he has to be given an opportunity to carry out that education every day.
I want to be sure that people understand when you're speaking of the Supreme Court decision, you're talking about the Missouri Supreme Court upholding the transfer law of 20 years ago or so that has caused the situation that we're looking at today. Mm-hmm. We have to take a break very quickly. When I come back, Dr. McNichols, I want to ask you about what legislative remedies you would hope to accomplish when the legislature comes back in January. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. We are talking with Dr. Tyrone McNichols, Superintendent of Schools for the Normandy School District, and also with Chris Kramer, who is the President and CEO of Beyond Housing. Back in just a moment. We'll certainly be taking your calls, too, at 382-8255 or 382-TALK. Email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on Air. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the Normandy School District's problems and what the community is doing and can do to help alleviate some of those problems, ameliorate them, if I may say so. My guests in studio are Dr. Tyrone McNichols, who's the superintendent of the Normandy School District. He came on the job July 1st and ran into a sawmill, if you will, of the problems the district is facing right now. With me also in studio is Chris Kramer, who's the president and CEO of Beyond Housing, a neighborhood organization that works very closely with municipalities in the Normandy District. Okay, Dr. McNichols, back to you with regard to legislative priorities. What does the legislature have to do, or does it have to do anything, to fix this problem?
Well, I guess one of the legislative fixes that could be utilized to help us would be the cost for funding. Right now, as I said a few minutes ago, we're not paying a fixed rate. It is whatever the tuition rate of the receiving districts are. And so if a district like mine that only has $12,000 per kid that we spend, for our kids to go other places is offsetting not only the tuition rate of the kids who are remaining, but we're subsidizing basically the other district's cost at the cost of our kids in our own district.
And you're doing that with local revenue?
With local revenue, correct.
Right. So the differential between Normandy and Clayton, which is about $7,000 per student per year, that differential comes from the taxpayers of Normandy that goes to the Clayton School District.
So a fixed rate of some sort, whatever that would be helpful. And the reason that would help would also help us because we can plan. Like any organization, you can't continue to monitor and be in constant flux financially and constantly be trying to make improvement. So there needs to be some clear guidelines about when people can enroll if we're going to be required to continue to do the transfer program. I mean, I would advocate not do the transfer program, give the districts that are having challenges such as mine additional resources, give us a time frame and guidelines in which we are monitored different than the MCIP 5 accreditation. That would be a fix that could at least give us the time, the resources, and the support to try to make an impact with the students that we're dealing with. And the reason I say that in regards to Normandy, Normandy just lost its accreditation in January. It's not like they've been unaccredited for 4 or 5 years like some of the other districts that were unaccredited. We've only lost our accreditation less than a year, and these other aspects have hit upon us. So we really have not really had a full year to impact comprehensive strategies to become accredited.
I'm going to ask you to explain to our audience what you're talking about when you talk about MCIP 5. Okay. I mean, it's a new test.
There's a new accreditation system that's in place now. They're basically 5 major areas. 2 of them really focus on the achievement based on the assessments, the state assessments, and end of course. And that represents about 60% of the points that you get. So we have to improve that area. Normandy has to improve on how well our students are doing on those assessments. And we do have a plan that we believe will make that happen, including what Chris talked about with preschool. One of the other components is graduation rate, the number of kids in a cohort. So if kids come in as a freshman, and do they graduate in 4 years? That's the cohort that they're looking at. That represents almost 30% of the points in and of itself. The college and career readiness represents that. And so those are other aspects, and then there's the attendance piece. Well, one of the pieces that impacts us in that accreditation 5, being a very transient district, is the graduation rate and the what they call the CCR, college career ready aspects, because our kids move in and out. And so the way it's set up, for example, if a kid moved into Normandy in May and then disappeared, we don't know where that student might have gone to. That kid would constitute a dropout on our records. And because our kids are transient, if they moved to Illinois and they didn't request like additional records, we would have to mark that kid as a dropout.
Are they more transient than other districts?
I think we've got one of the most transient communities
Why would that be?
Well, because of the poverty levels that exist and the things that Chris talked about earlier in regards to our number of families who are doubling up, or financially they get better off. They get to move into their own homes. There's just a lot of social aspects in that community that impact that.
So part of our point is hold the district accountable for that which they actually control, right? So the moving of a family, the district has zero control of, but as Dr. Domenico has just talked about, a significant part of the accreditation process from the state is really holding them accountable for things they can't control. You know, again, somebody moves in and out, and then you get penalized as a district because, again, the mobility rate is so significantly higher in places like Normandy Riverview and the city schools. And we'd be willing to bet there's a correlation between poverty, mobility, and a whole host of, again, demographics. Right. That's not to be an apologist or to make excuses. That's just factually saying the challenges that a place like Normandy has. And don't use the same accreditation model alone for the Clayton Ledoux schools for Normandy and Riverview.
I've got some data with regard to the poverty relationship. I'll get to that in a moment. But I wanted to turn to you also with regard to legislative remedies. I understand the position that the superintendent is in, and he might have to be a little more guarded in some of the things he says. What is your take on what the remedy should be? Should the Turner Law be just basically tossed?
Well, look, I think what's happened is several fold. One, as Dr. Nichols talked about, put a halt to the transfers right now. Just say, look, one, where are the kids going to go, right? There's just limited space.
But it's the law.
Right. No, I get it's the law. But again, how do they look to find a legislative fix to say we want to stop the transfers as of this date, right? So the kids who are right there get to stay there. We don't want to penalize them. And quite frankly, you know, Dr. Nichols and I have had this conversation. We get parents' desire to have the best for their kids, right? And we understand that. The goal is long term. How is Normandy the school of choice? So one, stop the transfer. Two, make him whole. So again, the district, the Normandy school district is not penalized by paying the uptick to these other school districts above and beyond what they pay for their kids. Again, mm-hmm. We're subsidizing the Clayton School District. How silly is that, right, in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, the resources that are available? And then lastly, as Dr. Nichols mentioned, they've only been unaccredited since January. So there should be a block of time that says, here is an accountability structure that the district says, okay, we can make that happen. We agree to that. Hold them accountable over a block of time to see the positive movement in the school test scores to give them a realistic opportunity to achieve that and not say, oh, by the way, you're unaccredited in January. Come July, we're gonna strip you of $15 million out of your $50 million budget. And, oh, by the way, hurry up and do better. Which, again, makes absolutely no sense. This is a regional problem. We need to have a regional conversation about it. Yes, today we're talking about Normandy, but it's really a regional problem about how do we make sure that we as the adults give the kids every opportunity to be successful. And we allege a part of that is what's happening in neighborhoods and communities in addition to quality education absolutely every day in the classrooms.
We had guests on the program on Monday talking about the same sort of issues that we are discussing here today. And one of the fingers one of the directions they were pointing their finger was at the fragmentation of this particular area. We've got a lot of school districts. A lot of them function differently. They're supported differently. They're more or less affluent than each other. And I don't know what the suggestion was. Is it, do we need a single school district or boil them down, condense them down to just a few where all the rules and regulations are the same? What do you think, Dr. McNichols? Is there too much fragmentation?
Well, I think it's a lot of local control, and there's some benefits to local control. For example, some districts might want to privilege other things over the other. I'm not sure if it's the fragmentation that's causing the issue. I think it's what we just got through talking about a few minutes ago. There's a lot of differences as far as socioeconomics that impact schools, and I think a lot of times we don't want to talk about that because we want to think it's all equal and it's the same level playing field, and it's not. You know, for me, it's even beyond just where people live. It's where kids start. We had a gentleman from Harvard, Dr. Ferguson was his name. And he came and he talked about the gaps that you start to see in developmental levels of children at 2 years old. So that's why for us that preschool readiness is essential, because if our kids come ready for kindergarten, then their chances of success are going to be more positive than if they're coming in already before they ever arrive to a school setting 2 or 3 years behind their counterparts. And yet they're being judged as if the playing field is even for all of them when they started school.
So Don, another quick legislative fix. Today, Missouri ranks 47, 48, 49th, somewhere in that range in supporting providers.
As it always has.
Yeah, and supporting providers of pre-K for low-income children. We don't need another study that says pre-K is good and has all these positive impacts that Dr. Nichols just said.
For all districts, not
right.
just
yeah.
districts like Norman.
So where is the political courage to say, we're going to fund that, and we're going to fund that university, and we're going to make sure everybody has the level playing field that Dr. McNichols talked about?
There are some interesting data showing that and suggesting that a distinct correlation between poverty and student test scores while we're talking about this issue. For instance, 93% of Normandy students receive free and reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. The district scored 11% out of 100 on the accreditation table. Mm-hmm. So there's a pretty distinct comparison there. St. Louis Public Radio's Tim Lloyd has put together an interactive map on our website, by the way, stlouispublicradio.org, stlpublicradio.org. It shows a link between test scores and free and reduced lunches. The lunches are available only to kids whose family income hovers around the poverty level. You can see for yourself by going to that website what the numbers show in dozens of other districts, rich and poor. And when you take a look at a district like Clayton and a district like Normandy and see how that works, it's very, very clear that there is a distinct association between the two. And, of course, you've already talked about that, Chris. It shows up in all your data.
Yeah, it does. And again, I think that for us, the delicate balance is that's not to be used as an excuse that, oh, kids can't learn, because clearly they can. Kids can do fantastic things that normally they can achieve just like the kids every place else. We just have to understand what are the resources that are needed and necessary to try to level the playing field as best as possible, and don't necessarily hold a district like Normandy to the exact, at least to the current accountability structures, where clearly don't acknowledge the challenges that families face and that the district face in things that are outside of what happens in the classroom every day.
Again, I encourage folks who want to learn a little bit more about this part of it to go to our website, stlpublicradio.org, and take a look at that interactive map that I was talking about. The figures are quite startling, quite dramatic. Let's go to the phones, and we'll begin with Justin calling from St. Louis. Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to take away from the Normandy conversation, but, you know, the last time we had this discussion, there was a lot of underlying prejudice and hype coming from people in the Francis Howe. And as a parent who called in during that, I would just like to say that nobody's mentioned that there's not been any problems. Everything's gone smooth. My daughter had one additional child in their class. The school, it's just funny that nobody's talked about it. Everybody made this big hype. I know people that removed their kids from the school, and everything's been great.
Yeah, so it's interesting, Justin. I bet if something would have maybe went awry, I bet we would have heard a lot more about that, right? So it's a shame. As you said, right, things have gone well. That's a testament to the Normandy kids and a testament to the Francis Howell folks for making that transition go smooth.
It's also testimony to the way the media works.
Absolutely.
The bad news is always good news for the
media. Travels faster.
Right. We have an email from Keith here I'd like to read. The request for more resources does not mean that there is a plan to correct the problem. To run a school district, there should be a level of expertise and competency in education, administration, and business management. I hear a lot of excuses, but what is the plan to recover, even if more resources are provided?
Okay. Well, we didn't really get to that question, but let me go ahead and tell you. Normandy does have a comprehensive plan that we're moving forward. One of those is a more effective literacy program throughout the whole organization. What we have in place right now that we've already brought in as a new team is we're piloting a new reading program in both second and third grade with iPads, in which we're actually having companies come out and do professional development and working with teachers and students in real time to provide them the kind of support and help our teachers get more effective and our students. And the initial feedback is that it's been very positive. Our kids seem to be engaged and actively working on that new material. Now, this is the first year that we've done that. Our other major focus is on STEM, and STEM being, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We do believe that a focus on STEM throughout our whole entire organization will not only help us with the MAP and the end of course exams, but it will also make our students career and college ready for the 21st centuries moving forward. And so those are two major areas that we are focusing on. And so we've mapped that out of what we think of the priorities of that and how the resources will be allocated for that. We also have a number of partnerships right now with the major universities around us. UMSL has a literacy program. We have multiple literacy programs with UMSL that are in place this year. We have science programs that are being integrated with WashU this year. So we have a number of things both at the elementary, middle, and high school levels right now that are in place to help us try to make the improvement. We brought in a whole new team for the most part. So we brought in a CFO from other districts who's been successful. We brought a new curriculum and instruction person who has been successful both at the state and national level. We've got people who understand data that we're bringing in. And, I mean, not to toot my horn, but the schools that I've worked with and the districts that I've worked in, I've been successful in improving test scores everywhere that I've worked.
So again, and Dr. Nichols has been with the kids for a month. Right. So, I get the emailers. You know, there's a generic belief that, you know, Normandy's been bad forever. They've been under credit since January. Right. And what Dr. McNichols is asking for, regrettably, is one thing that nobody's given him, and that he just needs a little time. Now, time with that, it's clear. And he said, look, hold us accountable, but give me realistic time and realistic resources to accomplish what he and his team believe can happen. And regrettably, time is not anything that he's been given right now. He's been given everything the opposite of time. It's lack of resources. It's pulled the rug. And the clock is ticking really loudly in terms of the school's performance. And I hope our listeners can understand that, again, undercredited since January, he and his team been with the kids for a month. And again, how can we have success if that's the context in which he has to operate?
So who is the custodian of the time? Who can give you the time? Is it DESE, the Department of Education, Secondary Education?
Well, the accreditation process is done through the Department of Education. So, yes, they could extend the time. But it's time and resources. It's not one or the other. It's both. There's a combination of both. We have to have enough resources to be able to maintain the programs that we're talking about bringing in and making sure that they continue. We believe that the programs that I've just talked about will make that kind of impact. We are also, and I wanted to also say this, we've hired some new administrators into the buildings. We have three new principals this year that weren't there. Two of those principals worked with SIG Schools, which is the school improvement grant that DESE set up, and both of those administrators have had success in turning around in schools and helping those schools make improvements. So we brought in people who have proven that they have the skill set to make improvements in the districts and in school settings and at the organizational level. What needs to happen now is to give us the time to implement those strategies.
Dr. Mix, could you tell folks too the thing you told me the other day about the kids and the positive chip on the shoulder that the kids have?
Well, one of the things that we've been out and about in the buildings, the administrative leadership team at Central Office, and the constant message that we're getting from students, these are students, is that things seem more positive, kids seem more focused. A couple of kids even told us that there are kids who they know sat in class last year who were disengaged that are more actively engaged. So the culture of Normandy has already shifted. One of the things that our high school kids are saying consistently to me is we're going to prove everybody wrong that this is a district to come to. Matter of fact, yesterday we had students from Francis Howe who were actually in our building as part of their high school, I think it's their newspaper. They were there yesterday. And one of the feedback components that I was told was that they said that our campus looked like a college campus, the high school. They were very impressed. And the things that they had heard, they hadn't seen any of that. And they were also saying that the kids that are in Francis Howe do not represent all the media hype that they heard. So it was a great experience. And our kids are talking about going back out there and doing a report on their school as well.
I have to take another break, but very, very quickly, if you have to make cuts, staff cuts, as you indicated earlier, if you have to do that, what happens to these administrators that you've just brought in? Last in, first out, that sort of thing?
Well, we'll have to prioritize all of our positions. We'll have to look at what are the essential components that need to be done. One of the things that I do think hindered some of the success from a central office perspective was that there are many, many aspects that are coming down the pipe that has to change. That has nothing to do with just the accreditation piece. The state is going to have a new evaluation system that has to go live in a year or so. There are new curriculums that are coming down from the state that will be online actually 2 years from now, plus all of the other aspects of what the district was dealing with. We needed an additional two persons to help us make that change. So we went from a three-person leadership, I'm just talking about the main leadership team, to a five-person team so that we can really focus on the things that can be most successful. I think we had too few people trying to do too many things. And as a result of that, we couldn't focus and really go deep and be successful. I think we've right-sized and we appropriately aligned to be successful now.
What about teachers?
We're looking at all programs. I mean, not just teachers. Right. We've got to look at teachers. We've got to look at classified. We've got to look at administration. We've got to look at programs. We've got to look at the whole organizational structure. It's not just about teachers. We can't just do it on the backs of teachers.
That's Dr. Tyrone McNichols. He is the superintendent of schools in the Normandy School District, and that's what we're talking about here today, the district itself, the problems it faces, and hopefully we can come up with some ideas or suggestions for solutions or for making some of these problems at least somewhat go away. Also with me in studio is Chris Kramer. He's the president and CEO of Beyond Housing, an organization which works with municipalities in the Normandy School District. We'll come back and we'll take more of your calls. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on what's going on in the Normandy School District in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius will be in St. Louis this afternoon to meet with Mayor Francis Slay, County Executive Charlie Dooley, and community stakeholders to discuss implementation of the Affordable Care Act. The Urban Crime Summit continues in St. Louis today, and prosecutors and politicians seem ready to go to Jefferson City to push for a special gun court. And on our Politically Speaking podcast, Missouri Senate President Pro Tem Tom Dempsey is defending his crucial vote during last week's veto session, which helped quash the so-called gun nullification bill. The Republican voted to uphold Democratic Governor Jane Nixon's veto. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Tyrone McNichols, superintendent of the Normandy School District, and Chris Kramer, president and CEO of Beyond Housing. Let's go right to the phones. We have some folks waiting. Let's get them into it, starting with Phil calling from Baldwin. Go ahead, Phil.
Hi, Phil. Hi.
You're Phil.
all right. They're using the same methods that have failed for the last 30 years, since or maybe 40 years in this. What needs to be done is to copy the method used in the Harlem's Children's Projects. The parents of the children have to be trained. Now, in the Harlem Children's Project, they take the parents and the children, and they go to summer school on the weekends for either 6 or 8 or 10 weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, both, either 16 or 20 hours. And they're trained, the parents are trained. This is the problem. The problem is not the teachers. I always used to think it was the teachers because they're paid professionals. But it's the parents. The parents need to be trained on how to raise children so that they're successful.
Okay, Phil, thanks a lot. We've had Jeffrey Candid on this program, and he certainly has a successful program going there in Harlem. But I guess, Superintendent McNichols, we're dealing with some different issues here, are we not?
Well, we are dealing with some different issues, but let me just kind of speak to the comment by Phil. One of the partnership that we have with 24-1 is kind of similar to what the Harlem program is designed around. We're trying to build a whole platform around education, housing, health, employment, and economic development. So that is part of what we're trying to do in our partnership with Chris's organization. And so when we talk about what is the role of the educational aspect, you know, as the superintendent, that's my role to try to represent that aspect of it. But when we're talking about economic development, we're working with local leaders and businesses. When we're talking about employment opportunities, are we considering local industry to support the school and us supporting them as well? So we have the Friends of Normandy and things of that sort. And then health. You know, one of the big things that we deal with a lot of our kids because of poverty is we have a high asthma rate in our district. We have over 800 kids, I believe, who have asthma criteria of asthma. And so we have to deal with things that other districts don't necessarily have to deal with. I've worked in a number of districts. I've had the luxury of working in Clayton, Kirkwood, Pattonville, the St. Louis City, Hazelwood. So I've been in a lot of different districts to have seen how different organizations succeed. And I can tell you, of all those districts, only two of those districts have had very similar kinds of populations, and the other ones have not. Not to that level of the challenges that we have. Do we need more parents involved? Absolutely. I'm not going to sit here and say that we don't need more parents. But I can tell you, when I went to Clayton PTA meetings, I didn't have 50 parents there. I had a handful of parents there. But when we had events, I had 50 volunteers there. And it's the same with Norman. We're going to build that up. We've got more and more parents that are starting to volunteer. I can tell you when I go to the football games and all the different events, the security people who work for us are telling me that more and more parents are actively asking, what can they do to support us? So it's working. It's a process. But it takes time. And like Chris said, we've only been officially on the job since July 1.
No, and look, I think if Phil's underlying sentiment is all the adults in the lives of children need to do a better job, then we can agree with that, right? That's parents, that's caregivers, that's neighbors, that's families, that's teachers, administrators, community partners, community leaders. We all can raise our hand and say we need to do a better job, a more effective job, a better integrated delivery of how we care for them and create the right kind of environment for them to be successful, including making sure that their home life is stable. So again, a number of things that Ty alluded to. You know, if we're simply providing housing stability for folks, that does a positive thing where they're not worried about where they're living tomorrow. They're not worried about the challenges of where they live. If we're providing access to primary care dealing with asthma, so if we build this health clinic next year that hopefully will be open by the end of 2014 in Pagedale to go along with the clinic in Pine Lawn, again, are we providing access so, again, we can deal with the health issues which then prevent the child from getting sick or having that asthma or that obesity or anything else that our kids are dealing with prevent them from being at school and taking advantage of the educational opportunities, that's going to help lead to the success. It will not happen overnight. It will not happen right away. But again, the way we're constructing, when you look at any community revitalization project that includes education across the country, what is clear that it's not just about education, it's not just about housing, it's not just about health or jobs, it's about all those things together with education being at the central core of all of it.
My understanding is that the Harlem Children's Zone is pretty heavily bankrolled. There are some big dollars in
New York
City.
It's good to have a billionaire to be the chair of the board of your organization.
That doesn't hurt. I'm sure you'd like to have that.
If there's any billionaires listening, feel free to call us. I'm happy to have that conversation.
The reason I'm bringing this up is in our program Monday, we talked to the executive director of an organization called Yes for Education. What they've been able to do in Syracuse and another city in Rochester, I guess, in upper New York State, was they have incentivized their whole program by getting the corporate world to come in there and provide and offer scholarships to these kids, you know, when they're in kindergarten. So they have the entire process to look forward to and work toward going to college because a scholarship is waiting for them.
So a couple of things to that end. One, today we are in our second year of a universal college savings program for every child who enters Normandy Kindergarten. So as you register to enter Normandy Kindergarten as part of the registration package, you get a $500 Missouri Most account in your name. Last year we had like 270 kids. This year we're hoping, even though there's reduced enrollment, we're hoping to see about 280, 290 kids begin that path as a beginning step. The second thing is the school district and Beyond Housing have created in this short time period that Dr. Nichols has been around a youth continuum. That's really a cradle-to-career continuum that says what are all the things that are needed and necessary to make sure that that child can be successful, where are all the key benchmarks that all of us want to make sure the kids are hitting to that we know that, so they can be successful. And for all our corporate listeners, Dr. McNichols and I will be on a tour sometime soon asking for their support on a number of different places where we think the local community can support us so we get quality programs to scale along this continuum to ensure that all those things that need to be in place to support Dr. Nichols and his team are indeed there.
And that's not something, Chris, that I've been reading very much about while we're talking about some of the things that are covered and not covered. But a quick question before I go back to the phones, Dr. McNichols, is this is great. Sounds great. Wonderful to have an opportunity for these young people to go to college. But are people who are in the kind of situation they are in Normandy, many families are one-parent families, they're poor, do they have any ambition to go to college?
Yes, they do. A lot of our kids do go to college. It's a matter of do they have the resources to be able to stay. We're part of the A-plus program, and so our kids could actually go to college free because of the A-plus program. They qualify based on grades and attendance, and then they go on to the JUCO, and they are able to get an associate's, and then move on to the next level. And so I think this is our third year that we've been in that program. And as a result of that, more and more of our kids will have an opportunity who might not financially be able to go to school to go to school. And I have a relative that actually works at a local university. What she's told me is that more and more kids who have the means are going to the junior colleges to save or to cut out that $60,000 a year bill just to take the prerequisites. And a lot of the universities, four-year universities, are looking at these students more than they have in the past because those kids are actually graduating. And she was telling me that their freshman rate of graduation is lower than the transfer of JUCO kids. The transfer of JUCO kids is actually higher in graduating. So if that becomes the new avenue for all kids in the future, then we're on track. We've got to get past that stigma that JUCO is not going to college. But a lot of our kids do go. It's a matter of do they have the means to be able to sustain going and finishing college.
And all the research says, again, and like the Viking Promise program for the kindergartners, if you start talking about going to college early on, both the family and the child, and save just a modicum of money, quite frankly, a whole lot less than $500 that we're talking about, the attendance rate and the success rate of getting kids to that place is significantly higher. So to your question, I think, look, sometimes folks don't think it's possible for a whole host of reasons, good, bad, or otherwise. What we're doing is saying through a whole lots of different venues, yes, college is real, it's possible. Where do you want to go and how can we help you get there? And those who don't want to go, which is fine, what are all the other opportunities? The trade schools, all the different kinds of things that are valuable jobs, that are needed jobs. How can we get you positioned to be successful for there as well?
Let's go back to the phones and bring in Gabrielle, who's calling from Florissant. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually went to Normandy High School this morning. I go to UMSL, and we are doing an education program, and we are doing field experience there. And I was so surprised, so pleasantly surprised at what I saw there today. The principal was amazing, took us on a full tour, showed us classrooms. The students, everyone was, hi, hello, good morning. They seemed happy to be there. The teachers seemed excited working with the students. So I've just been seeing a lot on the media. The principal kind of brought it up as all this like negative stuff tied to the school. And I was just so happy with how great everyone seemed and how happy they were to be there. And it was a beautiful school. So I just think good job to everybody who's trying there, because it really does seem like a great place. So. was my comment.
Gabrielle, thanks for the call. I think the two gentlemen here want to give you a high five.
Yes, thank you.
Over the radio.
Over the radio. Thank you, Gabrielle.
Thanks very much.
And I think real quick, I think the having UMSL on the University of Missouri St. Louis in the footprint, right next to the middle school and Lucas Crossing Elementary is a great asset. I know Ty has a great relationship with both Chancellor George and Carol Basile, who's a dean of the School of Education. A lot of students are deployed. They were lucky to have them as an asset. And we also have Express Scripts too, and we're fortunate to have such a great corporate partner to be in our geography.
You know, it's so important for people who have been watching all of this from afar to come in and actually see what's going on in some of these places. I know Karen Kalish and her cultural leadership program makes that part a prerequisite, that students have to visit each other's schools and spend some time, and it's always enlightening because they had a totally different impression of what they were going to find when they went from one school to the other.
Please, dear Lord, don't use the media as your yardstick for what's real.
And because of that, Don, we have actually invited a couple of the newspapers who walked with us last week, so that they can see for themselves. So all the hype about what they think is going on in our schools is not. And so we're looking forward to those articles that should be coming out in the next week or so, because we're pretty positive that what they saw is a true reflection of what's going on in Norman.
I think that's the value of programs like this, too. We can spend a little time talking about it and get peel that onion just a little bit more deeply than otherwise. Back to the phones. Michael and Webster Groves, go ahead, please.
Hi. I just wanted to ask the guests a couple questions. One, do they work with cooperating school districts on the Character Plus program?
Yes.
Do they work with College Bound on, it's a nonprofit, on getting kids into college and talking about college, you know, by their freshman year? And then what are they doing to address, like, apathy among their student body? So those are my questions.
So it was a yes to Character Plus. Not College Bound, but College Summit has been a partner. Beyond Housing and the school district doesn't do exactly the same as College Bound, but it's that same college preparedness and college readiness kind of not-for-profit programming that they have. And in terms of apathy, I think Dr. McNichols said earlier, look, there's a whole different sentiment of kids saying, look, we're going to show everybody wrong. We're going to show you how successful we can be in those, you know, those stigmas that are out there that are fanned by folks who just don't understand. We're going to prove them wrong. So, again, we think there's an excitement energy. I think the same would be true for the mayors of the 24 communities. I think they recognize and see good things are happening. A long way to go, right? We're not saying, you know, it's wonderful, but clearly they're feeling the sense of the positive movement, the positive direction of everything that's happening in the community, and we just have to keep moving forward.
I'm going to try one more quick call. Keith in Chesterfield, but it has to be quick.
Yes, a quick question. The panel mentioned mobility, and that was a problem on the school district. But then they also said that they needed a moratorium on the transfers. Wouldn't the moratorium just lead to more mobility and a higher move-out rate, further escalating the decline of the neighborhood?
I mean, I don't think there's necessarily a correlation, because the mobility will happen well before the transfer. The mobility is really driven by family circumstances and life circumstances, and not so much a Supreme Court ruling. So again, I think 70 or 75% of the families decide to stay in Normandy. We don't believe if you stop the transfer that that's going to change that type of mobility. Right? What's still going to occur until we can develop more programs and stabilize families is, you know, life crisis or life situation causes people to leave the footprint.
Which is part of our 24-1 development with Beyond Housing in the school district. That's the long-term fix. The short-term fix is the things that we will be doing in the classrooms.
In 30 seconds, Dr. McNichols, what's the most immediate timeline? What happens when?
As far as
what happens next? I mean, you're looking for money or?
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that what the Department of Education just requested is approved by the legislation in January. That would be helpful. That will at least give us a plan. You know, we have to plan a plan A and a plan B, if the money or not the money, and how do we go forward with that? We're already looking at our numbers right now, and part of the problem that we have to struggle with, and this has been consistent for the Normandy district that relates to the transition to the transit aspect, is the time of school to the end of school. It's been a pattern that we receive an additional 400 to 500 kids. And so we have to plan, what does that look like as far as resources and programs and staff?
Can you stave off any cuts until January?
We have the funding right now with reserves, if nothing changes, to be able to make it beyond January. It's further in the year that it becomes an issue.
All right. Going to have to stop it right there. I want to thank you so much, Tyrone McNichols, for being with us, superintendent of the Normandy School District, on the job now for a couple of months. Boy, coming in under fire. Chris Graymeyer, thank you so much for being with us. Chris is with Beyond Housing. Thanks for being with us, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape with St. Louis Symphony Music Director David Robertson as the orchestra begins a new season. Also with John O'Hurley, who is appearing in Chicago at the Fox, and he will speak with multidiscipline artist Rashid Johnson about his exhibition at Washington University's Kemper Art Museum. Monday on St. Louis On the Air, we'll talk about a new contemporary art exhibition at the St. Louis Art Museum, which explores fascinating connections, that is, between St. Louis and Germany. And next Thursday, we'll broadcast our legal roundtable in the courtroom of the St. Louis University Law School downtown. If you'd like to be a part of it, you have to be there by 11:30. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast. This program is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, production assistants from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Jeremy Bailey, Kristen Torres, and Spencer Reed. Executive producer is Robert Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with us. I'm Don Marsh.